We're very pleased to continue our study of the book of Genesis. And in our last study, we'd just gotten into the 35th chapter. This 35th chapter comes right after the sad occasion at Shechem, where Simon and Levi had waged a two-man war on the city. And after persuading the male members of that city to become circumcised, they caught them while they were still unable to fight, and they destroyed the city. They killed all the males, and they took the women and children captive, and they spoiled all even that was in the house. So it's very easy to see how the other members of the nations round about would look down upon the house of Jacob for having done this. This was a terrible deed. Instead of acting out of God's love and mercy and kindness toward others, they had shown that they were truly capable of some very bad things. They'd vaunted their immoral purity, and they used that as an excuse for murder and pillage rather than an example of God's holiness and mercy. And so when Jacob finally came to Simon and Levi, he came to complain, verse 30 of chapter 34. Jacob said to Simon and Levi, "You have troubled me to make me to stink among the inhabitants of the land, among the Canaanites and the Perizzites. And I, being few in number, they shall gather themselves together against me and slay me, and I shall be destroyed, I and my house." So you can see how Jacob fell. He said, I stink. I am really low down in their eyes. And they're much more powerful than this family is. We don't have a chance against them. They're gonna get together and slay me. I'll be destroyed. No, my family will be destroyed. My house will be destroyed. And of course, the retort that Jacob received from Simon and Levi was that in verse 31, "Should he deal with our sister as with a harlot?" These were young men. They were aggressive, and they had a reason to have their anger kindled. And so the anger just got out of hand, and they did a terrible deed. Well, this doesn't improve the situation of Jacob and his household. They had degenerated in many ways. They had really gotten away from God in a lot of ways. They really were not truly serving God in a very sincere and consistent capacity as they should have been doing. And so now it's time for Jacob to move. And God came to Jacob and told him this. In the first verse of chapter 35, "And God said unto Jacob, Arise and go up to Bethel and dwell there, and make there an altar unto God that appeared unto thee when thou fleddest from the face of Esau thy brother." So here's what God's plan is. Go back to Bethel now. He had never lived at Bethel, but he had been there at the time that God showed mercy to him whenever Jacob was afraid Esau was going to kill him. And Jacob had some fond memories of Bethel, no doubt, this being the place where God had appeared to him. But maybe he felt also ashamed of the fact that he hadn't followed through really like he should have. He had never built an altar here, and we don't have any evidence that he'd ever even gone back to Bethel. Remember, Abraham lived south of Bethel in Hebron, and no doubt Jacob had passed near here going back and forth to see his father, but we have no evidence that he really came back to Bethel. And so there was some unfinished business here at Bethel, really. Jacob had started a good thing here, but he really had not followed through with it. And it's easy to see how this whole family now was in trouble. They really needed to get back to God. And so this revelation that came to Jacob must have been like a breath of fresh air. God, of course, in all of his great wisdom, he knows what's the best course. He knows what's the best action. And when we depend upon God and pray to God and ask God to guide us, this is the best guidance we can have. And so God's advice and his command, actually, to Jacob was to arise and go up to Bethel and dwell there. Go up there and live. Not just a little short temporary visit. You go there and live. You make an altar there to God so you can do some worship. You're going to be worshiping God in this place. And this is the same God that appeared to you when you fled from the face of Esau, thy brother. I'm the same God that all along has been your God. I'm telling you what to do. Go back to Bethel. So Jacob decided, of course, to take this advice. This was probably the best news he'd heard in a long time. Here was a way out now that where he could kind of get a fresh start about things. So verse 2 says, "Then Jacob said unto his household and all them that were with him, Put away the strange gods that are among you, and be clean, and change your garments." So he's going to make a clean start. And the first thing here that he decided to do, which is a very wise thing, is to get all the signs and the instruments of idolatry out of his family. They had allowed these old things of the idolatrous gods to creep in among them, and they certainly were not able to worship the true and living God with these things encumbering them. These things of the devil, these things of false religion, these things that are not from the true and living God, are all hindrances and will interfere with our ability to serve and to be able to communicate with the true God. And so Jacob is getting a clean start. They were to put away the strange gods that are among you. Any kind of an idolatrous image, any kind of an idolatrous thought, any kind of an idolatrous inscription, any idea that would lend toward another god or another power, put it away. Be clean, he says. As long as they had these strange gods, as long as they had these elements, they were not from the true and living God, they were in a state that was not clean. They were unclean. And so it is with us today. When we take the things of the world and put them in the place of the things of God, or mingle them with the things of God, we're really not clean. We really are not in a fit position to be serving the true and living God. And in order to serve this God, we must put these things away and be clean. He says, and change your garments. Even the clothes that you're having, they may have had some clothing that had some inscriptions on them that reminded them of the idolatrous ways and practices, like we have today, all kinds of obscene writings on t-shirts that people wear around, signs and symbols that are not compatible with Christianity. And if we have those kind of garments, we should not be wearing them. Change your garments. Get out of those things. Do not appear to be like those that are around about you. They may have been wearing garments that were immodest, garments that were really not godly type of attire, not the way God wanted his people to appear. So change your garments. He told them to get some different clothes. And verse 3 says, and let us arise and go up to Bethel. Bethel was about 15 miles south of Shechem. It was about 1,000 feet higher than Shechem was. And so this is where they were going. Go up to Bethel, and I will make there an altar unto God, who answered me in the day of my distress, and was with me in the way which I went. Now, when we think about God and the things of God, one of the most beautiful memories we can have is when God was with us in our distress, when he brought us through those times of trial and times of trouble. And the most beautiful thought that a Christian can have is the day that he cleansed them of their sins, the day that they accepted God and the Lord and Savior Jesus Christ as the Savior, and decided that they're going to now be in the family of God and beg God to take them in and obey God's commands here. That's the time we can really have a pleasant remembrance. And we rise from that watery grave of baptism to begin this new walk, this walk in the Christian way. Those are fond, fond memories. And that's kind of the memory that Jacob had here. He said, this is the God who answered me the day of my distress and was with me in the way which I went. He answered Jacob when Jacob was afraid of Esau coming to slay him. But he answered us when we were afraid of losing our soul and having to miss heaven and go to a devil's hell. That's the way he answered us. And it's our answer was really greater than the answer that Jacob had, and so our feelings should be ever as great toward God as the feeling of Jacob was. And verse 4 says, and they gave unto Jacob all the strange gods which were in their hand, and all their earrings which were in their ears, and Jacob hid them under the oak which was by Shechem. So there was an oak there by Shechem that he buried these things, hid them there, got rid of them, got them out of his family. He discarded them. He did the best it looked like that it could be done here to put them in some kind of a trash pile, trash burial area, and they were no longer to be with his family. When this family left Shechem, they would not have these elements of the strange gods. They would not have any inscription, any kind of an image. He even names the earrings here. They already told him to take their garments off, and they would discard these things as they left. And probably many of these articles were things that they had captured as they destroyed the city of Shechem. And they were not allowed to keep those either. Anything that had to do with a strange god, anything that had to do with something that was a reminder of another god beside the true and living God, those things were to be left behind. No doubt Jacob had told his wives and his family many times about his experience at Bethel. and how great God was. And they probably wondered why it was that they hadn't gone back to Bethel. And so now, as he tells his household about the fact that they're going to return to Bethel, they would have to be excited about this. They would have to be looking forward to this event happening. For here, he was going to go back to Bethel. He was going to build a place to worship God. He was going to be centered around a special altar that God had instructed him to build. And this would be in recognition of God's faithfulness to him through the years. And so things are looking up now for the household of Jacob, because they're going to be doing something that God has instructed him to do in the way of serving God and worshiping God. They're getting away from idolatry and going to Bethel. And so verses 3 and 4 of chapter 35 say, "And let us arise and go up to Bethel, and I will make there an altar unto God, who answered me in the day of my distress, and was with me in the way which I went. And they gave unto Jacob all the strange gods that were in their hand, and all their earrings that were in their ears, and Jacob hid them under the oak which was by Shechem." So they're now on the way to Bethel. Verse 5 says, "And they journeyed." They're making the journey to Bethel now. Verse 5 further says, "And the terror of God was upon the cities that were round about them, and they did not pursue after the sons of Jacob." So Jacob really knew that the cities round about them would be trying to get vengeance on them. They knew that they were very unhappy because of their slaughter of the Shechemites, and they'd be almost certain to try to pursue after them if they left so they couldn't escape. But in some way, God prevented this. The surrounding tribes of the Canaanites were far superior to the family of Jacob numerically, but nevertheless, they became so fearful of them that they did not attack them. They did realize that the Israelites worshiped Jehovah. They realized that this Jehovah God was a superior God to their gods, that they had a higher moral and ethical nature about their religion, and so they probably realized that this Jehovah would protect his people. And so the lives of Jacob and his family had had an influence on these communities. But unfortunately, they had induced more of the fear of Jehovah rather than the love of Jehovah in the hearts of these people. But this did at least serve to prevent them from attacking them as they left. And they surely would have done this had not God been involved in this. So Jacob and his company arrived safely at the little community of Luz, which he renamed Bethel, and he immediately proceeded to build the altar. Verse 7 says, "He built there an altar and called the place El Bethel, because there God appeared unto him when he fled from the face of his brother." So he named this place of Luz Bethel, and now he names the altar El Bethel, and that name means the strong God of the house of God. As we think for a moment about the history of Bethel, we see that Abraham first came here, mentioned in the 12th chapter of Genesis, as he came into the land from Haran. Shechem was Abraham's first stopping place in Canaan, in the center of the land. It was in a vale of surprising beauty between Mount Ebal and Mount Gerizim. Here Abraham built an altar to God, but he soon moved on further south to explore the land more. Now Shechem is the place that Jacob and his family are just now leaving, of course. Bethel, about 20 miles south of Shechem and 10 miles north of Jerusalem, was Abraham's next stopping place. He stopped on a mountain near Bethel. It was one of the highest points in Canaan, had a magnificent view in every direction. Abraham was following the top of the mountain range, probably because the Jordan Valley was on the east and the seacoast plain was on the west. They were already pretty well settled by the Canaanites. But in the area of Bethel, Abraham also built an altar, as he did later at Hebron, and as he had done at Shechem, not only as an acknowledgement to God, but also as a way to publicize his faith to the people among whom he'd come to live. He must have liked Bethel, for there is where he settled when he returned from Egypt, till he and Lot separated. We next read about Bethel in Genesis chapter 28, when Jacob was going from Canaan to Haran to seek a wife. On his way, he stopped at Bethel. And we read Genesis chapter 28, beginning with verse 10. "And Jacob went out of Beersheba and went toward Haran, and he lighted upon a certain place and tarried there all night, because the sun was set. And he took of the stones of that place and put them for his pillows, and he lay down in that place to sleep. And he dreamed, and behold, a ladder set up on the earth, and the top of it reached to heaven, and behold, the angels of God ascending and descending on it. And behold, the Lord stood above it, and said, I am the Lord God of Abraham thy father, and the God of Isaac. The land whereupon thou liest, to thee will I give it, and to thy seed. And thy seed shall be as the dust of the earth, and thou shalt spread abroad to the west, and to the east, and to the north, and to the south. And in thee and in thy seed shall all the families of the earth be blessed. And behold, I am with thee, and will keep thee in all places whither thou goest, and will bring thee again unto this land, for I will not leave thee until I have done that which I have spoken to thee of. And Jacob awaked out of his sleep, and he said, Surely the Lord is in this place, and I knew it not. And he was afraid, and said, How dreadful is this place! There is none other but the house of God, and this is the gate of heaven. And Jacob rose up early in the morning, and took the stone that he had had for his pillows, and set it up for a pillar, and poured oil upon the top of it, and he called the name of that place Bethel, but the name of that city was called Luz at the first. And Jacob vowed a vow, saying, If God will be with me, and will keep me in this way, that I go, and will give me bread to eat, and raiment to put on, then I will come again to my father's house in peace. Then shall the Lord be my God. And this stone which I set for a pillar shall be God's house. And of all that thou shalt give me, I will surely give thee the tenth unto thee. So that's the reading in Genesis 28 about Bethel. So at this place, we see that the transfer of the birthright from Esau to Jacob had been validated by Isaac. It is now validated in heaven, God himself giving assurance to Jacob that henceforth he is to be recognized as the vehicle of the promises. The promises would go through him and his seed. The ladder that was seen here was a hint that the promises would culminate in something that would bridge heaven and earth. Jesus said that he was the ladder. John 1:51 says, And he saith unto them, Verily, verily, I say unto you, Hereafter ye shall see heaven open, and the angels of God ascending and descending upon the Son of Man. Well, Jacob is thought to have been about 77 at the time he visited Bethel this first time. He was 15 when Abraham died. He was 84 when he married, 90 when Joseph was born, 98 when he returned to Canaan, and 120 years old when Isaac died. 130 when he went to Egypt, and 147 years old when he died. His first 77 years were spent in Canaan, the next 20 in Haran, then 33 in Canaan, the last 17 in Egypt. And so this mention of Bethel is when Jacob was now leaving Canaan to go to Haran to find a wife. Now here we see Jacob going back to Bethel with his family. This was the place where 20 years before, in his flight from Canaan, Jacob had seen the heavenly ladder, and God had made him an heir to the Abrahamic promises. Now God assures him that these promises shall be fulfilled. Later on, we're going to see that Jacob will move on to Hebron, the home of Abraham and Isaac. Now, as we continue in this 35th chapter of Genesis, we have a very interesting statement made in verse 8. But Deborah, Rebekah's nurse, died, and she was buried beneath Bethel under an oak, and the name of it was called Allon Bacneth. At this point, the writer of Genesis notes that it was here that Deborah died. This was Rebekah's nurse. She was very old by now, and the experiences of the recent days had probably been too much for her. This may well have contributed to her death at this time. She was well loved and revered by the family, and there was no doubt sincere grief at her death. And this was indicated by the fact that they named the place of her burial the Oak of Weeping. Jacob had known Deborah all of his life. She had come with Rebekah, his mother, from Mesopotamia when Rebekah had left to marry Isaac, Genesis 24:59, and no doubt had cared for Jacob from the time he was born. She knew Jacob from the time he was a mere infant. And she had not accompanied him when he fled from Esau to Haran. There was 20 years that he was probably out of contact with her, but she as well as his mother must have grieved to see him go. They must have longed for him. She was just like one of her own children. And the record does not say when she rejoined Jacob, but was probably on one of his visits back to Isaac while he was living at Shechem. In fact, the very presence of her in Jacob's household is one of the reasons we can be confident that he did visit his father during those years. The fact that she was now with Jacob is also pretty good proof that Rebekah herself was dead at this time. Probably when Jacob returned to Hebron and found that his mother was dead, and that Deborah really was not needed any longer in his father's home, he urged her to come live with his own family. He probably felt he could give her a better home now. He could care for her. He had a deep feeling for her. And possibly she also served as a sort of a senior guide to the other servants, as well as a grandmother to his children. It must have grieved her greatly to see the things that took place at Shechem. Deborah goes way back to the very beginnings of this family here. And in addition to that burden, and the great trip up the elevated area to Bethel may have been too much for her aged body. At this point, she died. They apparently gave her a very good burial. She was buried under an oak tree at Bethel. And this story of Deborah's death and her burial at this time serves to remind us that the people here in Genesis are people just like we are. They had the same trials and struggles and the same heartaches and the same triumphs and joys that we have today. And death was just as much a reality to them as it is to us today. And they no doubt felt very similar about this to what we would feel today had we lost a closely loved one in our family. That's our lesson. Till next time, this is NC Crouch saying goodbye, friends.